for you to share some of your thoughts on what we've talked through today. Next slide, please. So what we'll do is we'll cover a little overview of the program. Some folks have been involved in some of the previous public meetings. Some of you may be new to the plan or the purpose of this get together and the document that we put out there. So we'll start at the beginning, overview the program that's funding this plan, and then we'll walk through the results of what we put together with this Priority Climate Action Plan for the region, and then go through some of the carbon reduction measures that we've identified. So next slide. So just as a start, the focus of what we, the plan that we put together is for the Central Region COG and the River COG area. You can see there in blue. So that is the region that we are covering in this plan. The other COGs in the area have been working on their own planning efforts in identifying carbon reduction strategies, and the state itself is working on a statewide plan as well. Next slide. So a brief overview, there's EPA started a new program last year called the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program. And with this program, EPA is intending to support planning efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions at a regional and statewide level. Underpinning the effort is to really encourage intergovernmental collaboration, knowing that addressing climate change and climate pollution is better addressed at a larger regional scale. To provide funding to do that upfront planning, and then to ultimately provide some funding to put some of the measures into place. Next slide. So there's two phases of EPA's program, and where we are now is the planning phase. So our region here received funding to put together a plan to identify priority greenhouse gas and carbon reduction measures for the region that are important to the region based on what the sources of the emissions are, what are the potential benefits to the municipalities and the residents in this region. The document and the draft we'll talk about today is item number one, the Priority Climate Action Plan. Once this is completed and submitted to EPA by March 1st, we'll shift into the Comprehensive Climate Action Plan. We'll take on the measures that we've identified in the Priority Plan, look through them, flesh them out a little bit more, maybe identify other measures, and look at a little bit more long-term efforts underway. Whereas the Priority Climate Action Plan identifies what could be started now and what we should focus our efforts on. There is a second phase where some of the measures that are put into this plan that we'll talk about today, there is funding available from EPA to get funding to actually implement one of the measures, one or two, based on to apply for this competitive funding. So that application is due April 1st. So that will be a lead on with this effort that you see. So one of the measures and the measures that are in this plan will be eligible to ideally get some funding to put into practice. Next slide. So an overview of the plan and the document that we'll talk through today and how we put it together. There's some major components here. As a start, CROG and some of the other COGs in the area worked with UMass Amherst to do a greenhouse gas inventory of the regions. And this really sets that stage for what are their priorities? What are the main sources of greenhouse gas emissions in our region? And that was a good starting point for us in planning and seeing where are the major sources. So where should we start to look at trying to focus our efforts on trying to reduce our emissions? So from there, we started to identify priority measures, and we'll get into a little bit more how we did that, but this was a combination of stakeholder outreach, working with the various governmental agencies, municipalities to get their feedback. We worked with the low-income and disadvantaged communities as one of the priorities is to see how do these measures not only reduce carbon emissions, but also can we see how they benefit our communities as well. And then lastly, how do we partner with agencies? Who is the authority to actually put some of these measures into practice? Next slide. And I will pass it on to my colleague.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Dave Donak, also with Dubé. So let's take a look at the GHG emissions inventory conducted by UMass Amherst. So net emissions for the region are about 8.5 million metric tons carbon dioxide equivalents. Now, okay, right, what does that mean? That's about 2 million cars driven for 1 year. Or if you'd like to hop in the car yourself, you can drive to the moon and back 45,000 times. So it's pretty significant. And of that, mobile emissions from transportation is the largest source, accounting for nearly half of the emissions. And of that, diesel emissions is the largest source within that sector. The residential sector is the second largest source with about a quarter of the emissions. And that's kind of split through buildings and electricity consumption, but the residential subsector is about a quarter of all the emissions. And of that, fuel oil for is about half of emissions associated with heating. So that's another large source. But you'll notice at the bottom there's essentially negative emissions, which is carbon uptake by forestry. And interestingly, that's about equivalent to the entire emissions from the residential sector. So as Antoinette said, yeah, we kind of use this as a baseline, sort of a picture of where are we now, and sort of what are the main sectors and drivers, and what can we target? Next slide, please. So when we looked at certain measures, only some of them were included in the Priority Climate Action Plan, and we looked at certain metrics. So first, it's the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant. So the first metric is, does it reduce greenhouse gases? That's sort of where we start. Second is it within the purview of a municipality or a COG? Like, is it something that the region can, or that organization can influence? And does it have demonstrable LIDAC benefits? Now, LIDACs are low-income or disadvantaged communities. There's a definition and methodology for that that comes through the EPA, through their kind of environmental justice efforts. So to become a LIDAC community has to be a certain area that either has a certain percentage of poverty if it's low-income, or disadvantaged in certain environmental burdens. Like, for example, it may have it may be affected by certain levels of air pollution. But these are the communities we want to target with these measures. Next, we want to make sure, is it supported by municipal leaders and staff? Is there a local buy-in? Is there interest in these subjects? Because if there's not, then it's going to be hard to implement a measure. And for implementation, they have to be ready in the short term. The program is very much focused on the next 5 years, like 2025 to 2030. So we need something with short-term immediate impacts that we'd like to see. And oh yes, this is important. The Priority Climate Action Plan is only the start. Now we got a lot of different ideas and measures. I think it was close to 80 that we counted. So they may not be the best fit for the PCAP. They might not, be the best at these different aspects on the side, but that doesn't mean they should be discounted or thrown out. They can be included later on in the comprehensive climate action plan and, can be further refined. How the measures were collected. We did a lot of intergovernmental coordination with the COGs and different agencies and municipalities within the state. There's several workshops and sector-based meetings. We'll touch on those next. And as well as engagement with the LIDACs through a really unique process, as well as municipal and residential surveys. So moving on to the intergovernmental coordination. We've had several meetings, a very serious schedule since November, meeting with the COGs and bringing in other municipal staff and leaders via just drop-in sessions. We've met with other organizations such as the Climate Technical Advisory Committee within Connecticut and the Connecticut Equity and Environmental Justice Advisory Council. And throughout all that, we also did a municipal survey to get ideas and sort of insight into priorities from municipalities within the region. And there was also a separate outreach, integrated and related to the LIDACs, where COG brought on an equity coach to reach out to these communities that, and they may not have the same voice that other communities have. So it was a really unique process to understand like what their concerns are. So that's where these priorities and measures are going to be focused. We need to hear from those in the community. To go through how we evaluated each measures, here's an example for one of them, and we'll get into all the priority measures shortly. This measure is installing solar panels and battery storage and potentially microgrids on buildings and properties owned by municipalities. So you read the summary description, it describes that. And property zone, they could be a town hall, a school, perhaps a parking lot where you could put solar panels on a canopy over it. And there's also measurable progress metrics. For example, you may target a certain capacity of solar power that's installed, or a percentage of buildings that have been upgraded. And then, of course, the greenhouse gas emissions reductions as well. We sort of did an exercise to say, like, okay, if we scoped it this way, and did, this many schools, here's the emissions reductions we could get. And again, it's so we looked at the short term, 2025 through 2035, and then also longer term out to 2050 to see the true impacts of this over time. We also looked at co-benefits, and I think this is really important. For example, for municipalities, you could have reduced electricity costs once you put solar on the building. It also improves air quality as you're using renewable power rather than power from fossil fuel plants, say. And we looked at the LIDAC impacts as well. Certain measures may have provide utility savings for them or improve the air quality in the area. Next was key implementing agencies. So we need to know the COGs and municipalities, what they can do, and who they might have to partner with, who are the other stakeholders. For example, utility companies in this case. And then there's also the authority to implement. Is this something that municipalities can actually do? Can they implement? And then as well as an implementation schedule. And again, we're looking short term. We want to get these done immediately to have an impact. So that's kind of over, a tentative schedule over the next 5 years. So this is what we did for every single measure. And let's move on.
Hi, all. My name is Renata Silberblatt, and I'm a senior planner with Dewberry. And I'm also sharing my screen. So, so this slide shows all the priority measures discussed in the PCAP. There are 12 measures covering five of the six sectors mentioned by the EPA. The one sector mentioned by the EPA that's not on this list is the industrial sector. These measures were felt to have the biggest potential to reduce greenhouse gas emissions in the short term for the region. As my colleagues have been talking about, and these measures build upon the greenhouse gas inventory. So you can see that the transportation sector, the region's largest emitter, has the most measures, and the measures also build upon the work already undertaken by municipalities, as well as measures that the public has specifically expressed interest in. In the next slides, we'll drill down on each of these measures a little more. Okay, so for this, for the electricity generation sector, we have two measures. The first is installing solar on homes owned by housing authorities, And the second is installing solar on municipal buildings, properties, schools, parking lots, et cetera. In the transportation sector, we have six measures. So the first three, converting municipal fleets to electric vehicles. So for example, like police cars, converting police cars to electric, installing chargers for these new electric vehicles, and then switching municipal gas-powered equipment, such as like a leaf blower, to electric versions. The second measure is installing public EV charging. And the third is converting school buses across the region first to 20% biodiesel, and then later on, also in the short term, moving to an electric or hybrid school bus fleet. The next three transit measures are, or excuse me, I should say transportation measures are, although the first one is transit related, I'm pursuing improvements for at least one of the six transit corridors, which were highlighted in the Metro Hartford Rapid Routes Transit Corridor study. The next one is implementing roundabout projects at already identified locations. And these roundabout projects would assist traffic flow, which of course cuts down on air pollution as well as encourages, lower speeds of vehicles. So that would increase pedestrian, bike, and vehicle safety. And then lastly, undertaking complete streets projects across the region. In the agriculture working land sector, we have one measure, which is to work with municipalities to increase tree planting and increase the urban tree canopy. And in the waste and materials management sector, we talk about expanding residential food waste diversion programs and examining ways to increase the use of anaerobic digestion across the region. And finally, the last sector in the PCAP, the commercial and residential buildings. We have two measures here. The first is energy audits for commercial and residential buildings. And this would come along with financial support to actually undertake the audit findings. And then lastly, energy efficiency upgrades to municipal buildings. So thank you, everyone, and I will turn it back to my colleague Antoinette.
Thank you, Renata. And I apologize. I realized I didn't introduce myself, so I'll just jump back in time and do that now. My name is Antoinette Quagliata. I'm also with the Dewberry team. I lead our sustainability services, and we've been supporting this effort for a few months now. So the PCAP, or the Priority Climate Action Plan, is available and on the CROG website. RiverCOG website has a link as well for your feedback. If you haven't already done so, take a look at the document, read through. What we want is just to get your comments, your feedback, anything that you feel like you would want to share at this point, whether you've been involved to date or not. Go through the plan. As Dave mentioned, there's an assessment of each measure in more depth in the plan, so you can get more details as to what it includes, what are the potential benefits of the measure. And we do ask if you would like to submit comments to do that by February 23rd. We've got links on the PowerPoint here, but I think that will also be is on the website, and then we can provide it. Maybe we can put those in the chat, those links for folks to take a look at that. Next slide. And so what's next? So the draft has been published. We have a public comment period, and then the PCAP will be finalized and submitted to EPA and by their due date of March 1st. From there, our next step is we are working with the stakeholders internally, identifying a measure to potentially submit for funding from EPA to actually put one of those into practice, because again, this plan is about potential priority measures that can move forward. But of course, finding funding to actually do it is key here. And those applications are due on April 1st. Once that's underway and in place, we'll move on to the Comprehensive Climate Action Plan. And as Dave mentioned, the point of that is to take another look at what's been in the PCAP. Does anything need to be refined? Can we start moving forward on that? And what else did we not address that's maybe a bit more longer term that we can add into the comprehensive plan, looking further out? And then from there, the last requirement for this EPA program is then to do a status report on the progress that's been made and where we are in this planning effort, and that's due in 2027. Next slide. I think we are. So that's the end of the presentation. Thank you for bearing with us. I know we went through a lot of the measures just kind of high level briefly, but it would take a long time if we went into everything in depth. But we wanted just to put them back on the screen here so you can see the breadth of all the measures that are in the plan. Go through the plan, take a look at what's in there, share your feedback. And then we just wanted to open it up now. If you have any comments that you want to share, please feel free to put them into the chat as well. I think you can raise your hand if you wanted to make any comments. Of course, we can also address questions if you had questions on the plan or the process or anything that we presented today. So thank you.
Thanks, Antoinette. Yeah, I think if folks in the audience have questions, like Antoinette said, you can raise your hand, we can unmute you, you can type it in the chat. While you're doing that, I would just note that if any of you work for municipalities, one additional step in this is we're going to ask the respective governing bodies of CROG and RiverCOG to endorse this plan in late February before we submit it to EPA. So, if you are municipal staff and you could kind of go through the report to your chief elected official, your town manager, just kind of summarize it. That would be a helpful step in terms of the approval process. Gail Stanton has a question. Could you explain the process for, sorry, disappeared, grant applications? I'll allow you to unmute yourself. Everyone can unmute themselves now. So Gail, you can unmute yourself and ask a question in more detail if you'd like.
Hi, I don't know that I have a more detailed question, but you have a timeline that shows a short period between when you, I'm trying to remember what the timeline was, but it's not long before grant applications are submitted. How are those, who's submitting the grant applications and what is the source for those?
Yep. So good question. So there's a couple elements to it. So if you are a municipality and you would like to apply on your own for a project that's covered in this plan, you are eligible. And also the respective lead agencies within their region are eligible. So for CROG and RiverCOG for the Hartford MSA, we're planning to submit an application by that April 1st deadline. And we're trying to work out the details of that this week, but there are multiple entities that are eligible to submit an application depending on what you want to do and what geography you're in.
And I'll just add that the limiting factor here is that for any entity that wants to apply for funds, that measure has to have been listed in the plan. So that's why we have over time made sure to engage with all of the different municipalities and the different COGs so that we captured anything potential on their end as well.
I think there were some hands up, Antoinette. Why don't we go with Shawnee Baldwin?
Hi, I had a question regarding the tree canopy. I noticed a lot of trees are being cut down by CLNP. I don't know if that's being addressed in there as far as not only replacing them, but stop cutting them down where they might be helping to filter out the air near the transportation parts. And the other part under the waste and materials management, is there anything in there regarding either installation or getting rid of AstroTurf, which is just a major emitter of plastics and other stuff we don't need in the landfill?
So the current measure that's in the plan now focuses on waste diversion, composting, and that's what came to this point. Any other measure related to waste or materials, we can consider further down the road. Again, you know, they're looking into make sure there's that connection to potential to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, benefits to the local communities and whatnot. So anything that's not mentioned here, you know, we can certainly consider for the larger CCAP.
Thanks for your question, Shawnee. Asia Meadows, that's a hand up.
Hello, yes. My name is Asia Meadows. I'm with Meadows Management, the Nonprofit Accountability Group, and I'm also on the CT Renew Steering Committee. I was in one of the meetings in January, and I just want to say thank you for inviting me. Let me see. Am I off mute? Yes, okay.
Yeah.
So yes, thank you for inviting me. I just wanted to make some notes of some of the, because I live in the north end of Hartford, and last time we had some community members on the meeting. I don't know if there are any in here today, but I just wanted to make note of some of the things that came up at our last meeting that we were thinking about with each of the steps that is proposed to be taken. One of the things that we were thinking about was edible trees somewhere when we were talking about tree canopies and things of that nature. So, places where people can just go and just get a little bit of nourishment, boost of energy. Also, when we were talking about the electrical vehicles, I'm not very versed on this, but I know a lot of the parts for the electric vehicles are made overseas, and there aren't really any US-based companies, if there are any. And that was one of the concerns that I had personally. I know we're currently working on transportation inequity, trying to get free transportation still. So some of the electric vehicles for public transportation was not really top of our list because we're still working on getting free transportation for everyone. I'm sorry, I'm just trying to look at my notes. Also, when we were talking about waste management, I know Anne, one of my colleagues from the Renew Steering Committee, she was talking about maybe one of the ways that we could do that was specifically the school systems at lunchtime, they still use styrofoam trays instead of using the old plastic trays that we used to use. So I think that could cut down on waste in one way a lot, because instead of throwing those away, we could just reuse the plastic trays if we implemented that back into the school systems. And then also about the electric vehicle. Oh, yes. So we were talking about solar panels, and we were talking about at that moment how currently, I'm sorry, just looking. So currently the grid is like, we're using dirty power right now still when we're electrifying, when we're using electrification, because our grid is not clean at the moment. So I kind of feel like if we don't fix that infrastructure issue, then somehow the solar panels being out there could still be harmful. So those were just our thoughts in our brainstorming at our meetings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Asia. And I'll just to quickly reiterate, this is great. A lot of this information, as I said, if it's been shared and it didn't make it into the priority plan, there are probably a few reasons. Again, we focused on what sort of implementation ready, kind of ready to go, or we had a chance to kind of think through and thought out. So if you don't see it here and you're sharing it now, this is great. This is all information that will help us as we get started to do the comprehensive plan.
Thanks, Antoinette. And then Patrick Doyle also had a hand up. Patrick.
Great. Thank you so much. Really appreciate the opportunity to see this. And, you know, our focus here at Knox is more in the agriculture and working land. So I'm just going to focus some sort of comments and a question there. But certainly appreciate seeing the urban tree canopy and its importance in here. That, you know, just to echo some previous comments, includes the importance of both planting new trees as well as preserving existing canopy. I am curious, and this to me is an intersection between the agriculture and the transportation, but a major thing I feel we could do to address climate change is limiting the distance that our food has to travel. So I'm just curious if there was any talk about ensuring access for folks, especially in urban communities, to being able to grow their own food and assistance with that, if that was a part of the discussion or not. And, you know, certainly I will make comments on the report, but I was just curious previously in the process what discussion may have happened around that.
That's a great comment. And no, it did not come up to that degree. I think that's a new one for us to consider. So thank you for sharing. We can add it under that category for agriculture in when we look at the CCAP.
Thank you so much.
Paula Jones is a hand up. Paula.
Hi, thank you. Let's see, I chair the Conservation, Energy, and Environment Committee in Bloomfield, and I co-chair the Trees for Bloomfield Initiative. So I'm going to echo a couple of the earlier comments made with respect to tree planting and tree maintenance. Was there any conversation about tree planting on private property? And I asked the question because we've had success with the program where we've gotten grant money and we've actually helped homeowners plant trees, because you can make a lot more progress, I think, just in terms of increasing the tree canopy in areas that need it, if you're not restricted to municipal property. It's a very popular program. We planted close to 200 trees in 2 years, and it's a great way to increase community engagement as well. I kind of bring it up because municipalities are often strapped in terms of budgeting constraints for maintenance programs. So to the degree you get homeowners involved and you're increasing the urban tree canopy that way, it's kind of a good thing. So just curious if that was something that was even, thought about. Thank you.
Sure. And Kyle, I can address that question.
Sure.
It did come up, and I think the reason we focused on the PCAP here was on public land, is that whole timing issue. So with the EPA's guidelines that the measures here should be as, actionable, implementable as possible, we focused here on the public land, seeing as that as sort of an easier kind of approach or a shorter timeline. But we did think about that, and I think that's something we can certainly then consider for the CCAP.
Antoinette, I could probably go to some questions in the chat. So Lisa Mendham had a question. And Lisa, you can unmute yourself if you want to speak for yourself, but I'll just read it real quick. How can we marry efforts at the local advocacy level with what we get, with what gets through the state legislature? Last session was disappointing. And then we start all over again the following year. So much effort goes into contacting our reps. We need them to push common sense legislation through. How do you foresee this session going in terms of meaningful progress action? Just quickly, it's a short session, so I wouldn't anticipate a huge lift on really any issue this particular session. But broadly to your question, I think, and like what Antoinette was saying, the CCAP is, we'll have more time to do this type of discussion and conversation and work over the next year through the CCAP. So I do see more of a role for a broader conversation to bring in elected officials and have these kind of broader strategic conversations during the next year. But Antoinette, I don't know if you want to kind of speak to that a little bit about the CCAP and how you envision that could go.
I think that's a good point. We did quite a robust stakeholder engagement that we could fit in. We had a short timeline starting about end of November until now. But the benefit of the CCAP is we do have a longer time period, which will provide us with that opportunity to engage with those that weren't able to get to us just because of the time of year and the short time frame. So I agree with Kyle. Yeah, we'll have more time to do even more stakeholder engagement for this effort.
Thank you. Yeah, that was my concern, the short legislative session this year. And as like I said, we're starting all over again. So with a longer session the following year, which would put us into 2025, any legislation passed during next session, we may not see until 2027 come into effect. And things like having schools mandating food waste diversion and things like installing dishwashers and whatever to get the trash levels down, they seem like relatively simple steps that could be done, in a matter of months, as opposed to having to wait another 3 years. I know we're all on the same page of, doing all we can, but they seem like, they should be really easier targets to help all of this along. But thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. Yeah, I can speak to waste in particular. That was one hesitancy I think all the councils of government had on waste is we felt like we didn't want to step off the ledge without some state support. So I think, like, to your point, it needs to be kind of a statewide conversation with the legislature involved to really move the needle on that.
And I think, is enforcement going to be an issue as well?
Yeah, it's not my area of expertise, but yeah, it's what everyone who does know, and Christine, I know, not to put you on the spot right here, but I think mandates and enforcement, yes, it's probably part of the necessary recipe, I think. It's why the councils of government, we don't have any statutory authority in that realm, so it's kind of why we felt like we weren't the best mechanism to do a waste management proposal, but that's kind of where the conversation has ended, I think, at this point for us on waste.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Brendan Garrity has a hand up. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, apologies, my mute was on. Thank you very much. This is a great presentation. I think I like to focus on implementable actions. I think many of these make a lot of sense. One quick question I had was related to the benefits. So let's say, once we've identified our key areas we want to target for grants, and once you go to apply for a grant, will the benefits be spread across the region? It's a big region, right? So our study area is pretty big. Are the benefits going to be spread across the region? Will it be more like, we'll be able to do, for example, three housing, so let's be able to add solar to, or is it trying to spread it out, or is it more about just looking at the projects that fit, if that makes any sense?
It does, yeah. So the way the program guidance is written is that LIDAC, that acronym that Dave showed, low income and disadvantaged communities, I think that would be an initial focus, but I don't think it limits any potential projects to just those communities. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, if a wealthier community or a more affluent community wanted to do solar panels or whatever, you could and be eligible. But I think in terms of prioritizing, you'd want to hit the low income communities first.
Completely agree. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Exactly. And when the applications are put together, that's where, you can see that these programs are sort of idea programs, but the project itself, when you go for a grant application, those details will have to specify, where exactly will it be implemented? How will it be implemented? And that's the process where at least we will be now and working on our grant application, and those who are putting together an application will have to consider those specifics.
Antoinette, here's a question that I'm not qualified to address. So maybe you or someone at Dewberry, in the chat from Laura Gray. Can you address the current issues with lithium and cobalt mining? I'm seeing images of toxic lithium lagoons on social media and want to better understand the environmental and human costs of cobalt mining. I think we need to be prepared to discuss these energy alternatives.
It's an interesting question, and I'm far from any type of expert on batteries, but I get the point here is that any measure that we're looking at implementing, there's the upfront what we see the benefit, but what are some of the other pieces to it that we need to consider in moving forward? So, you know, for example, the sources of batteries, are there ways to recycle them? I know with transit buses, that's an issue too that I've heard in going to electric buses is what do they do with the batteries if they need to replace them? So I can't adjust the specifics, but I think as we move forward in looking at these measures, it will be what, you know, what are the larger considerations? Because right, the other question goes to the grid that someone, I think Asia mentioned earlier. We can go to electric, but where, you know, what's the ultimate source of that electricity? You know, is it clean or, you know, or not? So there's a lot of nuance to the measures here. So that's a good point. And I think we are cognizant of it. We don't necessarily have answers to all the questions. It's not always a clear decision, but it's something to factor in for sure. Sorry, I hope that helps, but that's the best I think we could cover now.
Great. There was one question, I think Megan kind of answered it in the chat, but I can direct it to Dewberry, see if you have any additional thoughts. It's from Kathleen Seeley. Does this include increasing green space in land acquisition? Since forests are such an important carbon sink, will this complement the state goal of increasing green space to 30% by 2030?
And I think, you know, similar to the other measures that we went through and just sort of making a decision of what to filter out, when it came to agriculture, we looked at what was the highest sources or potential either for reducing emissions or a sink, and then what was more of a near-term implementation. So we decided to focus on urban tree canopy, planting trees more of the immediate area, not only for the benefit of as a carbon sink, but also for the co-benefits of planting trees in an urban area for addressing heat island and benefits to surrounding communities. We talked about expanding to land green space acquisition. It didn't make it here because it didn't fit for timing wise and others, but it's certainly something that can be considered for the CCAP.
I am going to post another link to the comment form for folks. Sarah posted it already in the chat, but I'll send that again. If there's no other questions, I can just briefly touch on next steps. So what we are doing as a region and as a councils of government is we're trying to finalize a concrete approach for an implementation grant. So we're going to iron out those details over the next, well, by the end of the week, and then really get going on an implementation grant. I think for those of you who are in attendance, if you want to just go through the plan at your own pace, you can email myself. You can use that comment form. But I would also say if you folks have strong opinions, if you're an elected official, if you're a municipal staff, and you think your elected officials are interested in a certain project, then please let us know ASAP. Letters of support are good. Letters of commitment are good. If you have specific projects that you want to be looped in under this PCAP umbrella, we should know ASAP if you want to help get funding under this opportunity. Oops, there's one more question. Let's see.
There's a few more.
Yeah, Jeffrey Duncan, you can ask your question. If you want to unmute yourself, go feel free.
Yeah, hi, thanks for having me. This has been very informative. So currently, you know, I think everyone's fairly aware of the issues that we're having with solid waste, and we're exporting a lot of it to a bunch of different locations throughout the country, which is obviously costing the taxpayers, you know, a reasonable amount of money. So my thoughts were, you know, has there been any communication between CROG and DEEP regarding, you know, waste, solid waste management, and potentially moving to siting possible waste to energy facilities? Can you utilize biogas, convert that to electricity? And then, you know, we obviously are already having issues with, you know, the grid is not really going to be able to support, you know, from now until say 2040, all the EV cars and everything. So electricity generation is a big one. And also, you know, exporting all this waste is costing a lot of money. So has there been any thought or discussion between the two organizations on this? And I'd love your feedback on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, there has been. And waste has really risen to the top of the conversation in terms of, you know, a concern, a priority. And we thought about it seriously for an implementation grant. And I think we collectively decided yesterday after talking through the details a little bit more that just the timing isn't quite right. You know, the regional waste authorities aren't quite where they need to be. Just the various infrastructure and the mechanisms and the staff capacity we felt just weren't right to be successful under this grant criteria, just due to the timing and where we are. But I think where we ended it was, it's still important and we got to address it at some point. Christine, if you have your hand up, go ahead, feel free.
Yeah. Hi, Jeffrey. I work for NVCOG, but I've also partnered with CROG on this. We've had multiple conversations over several months with Deep about this. And I'll just say that if you've sort of been tuned into the whole waste saga going on here in Connecticut, I think the real solutions are going to come legislatively. They're going to come from mandates, things like extended producer responsibility, unit-based pricing, like mandatory things that are in the power of the legislative branch and not so much in DEEP's hands, which is the executive branch, or the COG's hands, which is even a step removed from that with really being people who implement projects. If we had, one of the things we're asking DEEP for was something like, you know, shovel-ready projects. Is there like, you know, an anaerobic digester that's planned and ready to go, but just needs some money to get over the finish line, because we have 2 months to put together this implementation grant application. And, you know, securing a site, going through the enormous permitting process for getting more capacity online, all those things are not ideal for a short range grant. So I hope that provides a little more context. Happy to talk about this offline as well. I'll put my email in the chat. I deal with waste issues pretty regularly, and I completely understand your concern. We just, after a lot of conversations, determined this is not the best fit for the grant.
Understood. Thank you, Christine. That does clarify my question around this current grant. But yeah, I would definitely contact you offline. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I'll throw this out to Dewberry if they want to address them. Sounds like a CCAP question, but from Laura Gray, when you think of planting trees, it is important we plant native trees. Some organizations don't seem to care about that, surprisingly, but it's very important to us and our environment that we use natives.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. And when we look at co-benefits and other aspects to any of the measures that we want to implement, when you think about native plantings, they're generally are better suited for the climate, the environment. So theoretically, there's less watering, less care, less chances of, you know, competing with native species. So yeah, those are the types of things that want, you know, with some of the measures, and you'll see as you go through the plan, when we looked at co-benefits, those would be the things to sort of add on as, you know, once measures are being thought through and from here, to implement, what are some of the nuances in the decisions to make.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the thing is the PCAP. We'll talk to public works directors and tree wardens and just talk about the practicalities of maintenance and whatnot. So we'd want to get their thoughts before we kind of drill down onto specific recommendations. But yeah, that's a great question. Appreciate that, Laura. Anyone else? Questions, comments, suggestions for the CCAP phase? Okay.
I'll just quickly, I know there's a comment here from Asia. It's not necessarily a question, but as far as mentioning providing jobs, and this is relating to trees, but I think just in broader, that is one of the pieces that EPA does identify in looking at the measures is, you know, are there any connections to workforce development? So that is on the radar as well in considering the measures.
There's no more questions. I think we can give you folks your afternoon if you want. So I'm going to put my email in the chat, just in case Sheila Krog. If you have any general questions about this plan, I'm happy to talk to you, answer any questions, concerns. Sarah or Antoinette, is it the 23rd we're taking final comments by for the edits? Can you remind me?
Yes. Yes. The 23rd, February 23rd.
Okay. And you can use that form. It's linked in the chat there. Then for folks in RiverCog,
we'll be having a second public meeting. So if anyone asks and they weren't able to attend and they want to hear the presentation, it is next week at, and I can't get to my calendar at the moment.
7 p.m. next Thursday.
Yes. Yep. So in the evening. So if anyone wasn't free, I know during the day, not always best, especially for other residents working. So we will do have a second session.
All right. Well, not seeing any questions or comments, we'll end the meeting there. We thank you all for your time. Feel free to send us any questions or comments on the plan, and we'll see you down the line. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Take care.
Thank you.